Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 160. My name is John Morgan in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Beautiful, historic, incredible, amazing. No, not really. It's Atlantic City, New Jersey. We'll get into that in just a little bit because this is a unique place. There's no question about it. But before we do that, let me just say I apologize to you. I'm throwing out the apologies right away because we didn't do 159 and a half. Even though I had cold coffee with me, even though we should have been able to do that, UFC on Fox 29, Poirier versus Gaethje, incredible fight card, incredible main event. Fight of the year so far, Dustin Poirier versus Justin Gaethje. And we were together. It was a Fox show on the West Coast. Everything was getting over early. Myself and cold coffee had all the plans in the world to get together for an and a half. We had Jose Youngs with us from Sports Illustrated and Fansided, who, of course, did episode number 159 with us. Enjoyed hanging out with him. He took care of us. He's a Phoenix local there, lives downtown, took care of us all week long, showed us the right places to go dine at, showed us the right places to go get some cocktails, even hooked us up with a ride here and there with his cameraman that was willing to show us around. So, I mean, Jose Youngs hooked it up and thought we'd get together for an and a half. It just didn't happen. I'm telling you what, I was bummed about it because I had a lot to talk about. I thought that card was fantastic. But the reality was 14 fights. Whew. 14 fights is long. And I had heard that the UFC actually, explored the idea of kind of shipping some fights off and trying to get them to another card, but it just didn't work out right. And of course, I mean, hell, the week before, 13 fights went to 9 real quick. So you don't want to be too quick to make changes and give yourself a little bit of insurance in the back. But didn't happen, and we ended up with 14 fights. It was a long damn day. We showed up at the arena at about, 10 o'clock in the morning for an 11 o'clock opening, doors open, I should say, and we didn't leave until after 10 p.m. So 12 hours at the arena already, not to mention the transportation both ways, not to mention at that time we hadn't had any dinner, and we had an early flight to catch out the next day. So by the time we got back to the house, to the Airbnb that we had rented there in Phoenix, my man Cold Coffee was just done. He was done. And I thought about jumping in solo and just sitting down and knocking out something myself, but, it probably wasn't going to be edited until the afternoon. And so I thought about the delay, and then I'll just be honest, then I was like, I could actually use a couple hours sleep myself. So I was bummed. I was bummed that there was no and a half last week. But, reality of the day was 14 fights is too damn long. It's too damn long. And here's the other thing, too. I didn't realize, actually, after the fights were over, my fault, I didn't pay attention to the work schedule. Sorry, Mr. Dan Stupp. Sorry, Mr. Matt Erickson. Sorry, Mr. Simon Simano, the other editors on staff. I was actually the editor on duty after the fights were over that night, so I actually had to kind of edit and go through and some of the stuff that the young Mike Baum was handling up, some of the stuff that the magnificent Morocco was handling up. I had to go through and actually edit that, so I had editing duties to do too. So work duties called. Yeah, it was just a bad combination of things, so I do apologize for that. But I never like to spend too much time talking about a card that's a week old at this point. As we sit down, as we always do on Thursday night to record the MMA Roadshow, it's a whole new week. We've moved on, so I never like to spend too much time talking about old cards. But I do want to say, Dustin Poirier, man, incredible performance, and Justin Gaethje, incredible performance as well. I mean, that fight lived up to everything that we thought it would be. That is a fight of the year candidate, and I love when fights live up to everything you want to be. You hype them up, you believe in them, and they deliver. And I know this wasn't the type of fight that casual fans probably realized the importance to, talked about rankings, things like that, but I mean, come on, if you're an MMA fan, you knew you couldn't miss this fight. And then for it to deliver on all the expectations, all the hype, all the excitement that you had, I mean, that is what's up. That's what's up. And two really good guys. And I got to say, Dustin Poirier had kind of teased going into that fight that he thought a big win might mean a title shot. And I thought, well, Maybe, but, you know, there's a lot going on there, right? There's a lot going on. But I got to say, you know, after he wins that fight, after he goes in and just digs deep, survives some trouble, you know, deals with all the attacks from Gaethje, the leg kicks that you know are coming, and then comes back, hits that counter left, and ends the fight. And then, you know, as he walks by press row, I had the camera phone rolling, and he's like, you know, MMA junkie, I love this shit. I'm coming. I'm going to win the title this year. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing, man. That emotion's amazing. I love that. You know, it reminded me of Holloway, you know, talking about the big game he wanted, and, you know, when he left after. I mean, just, I love that stuff. When you can catch that raw excitement, that raw emotion as they walk by press row, and I love fighters taking the time to give us a message at MMA Junkie and give us a little shout-out, to give us that kind of quick exclusive before they even make it back to Fox, you know, before they're on TV to kind of give us that instant reaction. I love that. I love that. And Dustin Poirier did that, so that was awesome. But then, you know, gets back there to the back. He came back on crutches. Of course, the leg was bad. The knee, the right knee was bad. And he came back on crutches. You know, he was able to walk a little bit, but the crutches helped him out for sure. And he sat down in a chair. You know, UFC PR told us, hey, listen, Dustin needs a chair. So if you want to adjust your cameras, all that, get it ready. He's going to need to sit down. So, you know, obviously understandable after you fight Justin Gaethje. He sat down and gave us just a bunch of great answers. I'm sure by now you've seen some of the clips and you've seen the interview or whatever, but just gave us some great answers talking about what happened, you know, about the eye pokes, about, you know, knowing the counter left was going to be there, everything that happened. And then the other moment that'll just stick with me is that last answer. It's the answer that we put up on social media and it blew up, you know, where basically I just said, hey, listen, you know, I know you want this Khabib fight. I know you want this Khabib fight. I know you want it bad. But if for some reason this doesn't make sense, if some reason it doesn't work out, you know, is there anything else that makes sense? Are there other fights that make sense? And basically all I was trying to do was give him an opportunity to kind of, you know, maybe set up something else, a backup plan, a B plan, if you will. And the answer that Dustin Poirier gave was absolutely incredible. He said, listen, I don't have anything else I want. You know, I'm not trying to get a rematch with Eddie Alvarez. I'm not trying to get a rematch with Conor McGregor. I'm not trying to catch up with these people. You know, I'm trying to win gold, and I'm trying to be the best in the world. And then he shared that story. You know, he's like, you know, me and my girl, my wife, you know, back when we were just dating, you know, she drove me to weigh-ins. I didn't even have a car. She drove me there, and we slept in these, you know, broken-down motels. You know, she was there to support me, and now I'm at the top. And I want to win this fight so that I can go to bed one night with that belt around my waist and say we did it, and say that we did it. And I'm telling you right now, man, I'm getting choked up just talking about it right now. Now, maybe it's because I had an award-winning, you know, frosty beverage or two along the way, but it's emotional. It strikes up emotions in me even now. And I mean, who doesn't want that? You know, to thank those that stood beside them, and just say, listen, man, I delivered on everything I promised I would deliver on. You know, and this is for us. You know, this is for our family, as anybody can tell you with kids and that family unit, man, it's tough. And I thought it was beautiful, man. I thought it was really beautiful. And to be honest with you, I feel like it was something I needed to see. I left Brooklyn disgusted, man. It was just such a weird weekend. I think everybody left disgusted. Just the way everything played out, it just felt like, my God, you know, this is that. This is where we've been going. This is the direction we've been driving. This is the let's sell the conflict. And I get grudge matches mean something, man. Hate means something in this sport. You know, two rivals going at it means something in the sport. But let's not forget the other part too. Dustin Poirier just epitomizes, that speech epitomized to me what is great about this sport, what I fell in love with this sport to begin. I fell in love with this sport not because I cared about two people that hated each other, not because I cared about a grudge match being settled. Does that mean along the way I haven't partaken in enjoying a few of them? Of course I have. But I fell in love with this sport because I feel like the people that do it are incredible athletes and incredible human beings. And I think the sacrifices that they make as athletes, the sacrifices that they make as people, is what makes them incredibly special. And it's the reason that I wanted to tell their stories. It's the reason that I wanted to be a mixed martial arts journalist and let people, let the world see who these people are and what they go through and what they do to go out there and do what most of us will never, ever, ever have the balls to do, which is lock yourself in a cage with another human being. I know it's a sport. I know it's a sport, but it's scary as hell. When Donald Cerrone, the cowboy, will tell you that he gets scared to death and he pukes and he wonders, why in the hell am I doing this for a living? Why in the hell? That goes to show you that, yes, it's an amazing sport, but it's not just a sport. There's something special about it. There's something very, very special about it. And I'm not trying to sit here and be all high and mighty and glamorous or whatever. I mean, listen, I love the page views we get from the Conor McGregor stories. I love it. And I love Conor McGregor. I'm not insulting him. I'm not trying to take away everything he built, man. He has been a masterful salesman. You know, Chael Sonnen. I mean, look at everything he did. I mean, hell, Tito Ortiz, if you want to go. I mean, you can't take away from it. That helps get eyeballs on the sport, and that's all important. But we can't forget. We can't forget about the other side, too. And it's not just about sales. It's not just about creating a spectacle. It's about people remembering what this is about. And so, you know what? Dustin Poirier, let him have that title shot. I believe that right now. Let him have that title shot. I love it. I love the idea. Strike while the iron is hot. No offense to Eddie Alvarez. I know Eddie Alvarez believes that he deserves it, but he was sitting out. And Poirier is kind of the hot one right now, right? I mean, he came off that strike while the iron is hot. Eddie Alvarez can take the next shot. He can take the next shot because Tony Ferguson's out. There's no question, man. We saw the picture. It is not pretty with those staples. I mean, listen, he is the Wolverine, and he's going to be back. And he's gonna be better than ever. I have no question about it. And I'm looking forward to it. But it's going to be a while. And Conor McGregor is going to be out for a while. I do believe that. He's got the June court date. I think there's going to be some issues. I don't think he's doing jail time. I don't think like that. But, you know, there's still internal issues that are being worked through. I know everybody's being kind of quiet about it right now. But, you know, it's not over. It's not over with yet. So there's things that need to be dealt with. In the meantime, I say, give Dustin Poirier that fight with Khabib Nurmagomedov. I love that idea for a title shot, and I hope it happens. I really do hope it happens, and I hope people realize that, you know, there's another way to market this sport and to think about this sport and to sell about the sport. Trust me, those human moments are never going to get as many eyeballs and as many clicks as Conor McGregor throwing a dolly through a window. It's just the way the world works. It's not going to happen. But when people talk about their favorite fighters, who they cheer for, who they pull for, I think the human element is a huge part of it. I really, really do. I feel like that is a massive part of why people cheer for certain fighters. And then once they're in there, yeah, then we like the fighting. You know, then we like the fighting. But, you know, when I listen to fans talk, when I read forums, when I listen to other podcasts, when I listen to interviews, whatever – I mean, people aren't in here. Of course, there's the specialists that break down techniques, but that's not the majority of what people are talking about. It's the emotions, it's the stories, it's everything involved. And when people like Dustin Poirier turn in a performance like that and then have the emotion they have and then you know, bare their soul with the truth of who they are and what they've overcome to get here, man, I think you got to reward that, man. I think you got to reward that. And that'll be my lasting take from UFC on Fox 29 in Glendale, Arizona. So I apologize that we couldn't do an and a half. But that's what I would have told you. That's for sure. You know what else I would have told you? I would have told you that the MMA Roadshow is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. And you know you need life insurance, especially if you got a family like Dustin Poirier. So go to healthiq.com/road for the road show, of course, to support the show and get your free quote. It's all about better science. If Cole Coffee was here, he'd tell you that. Health IQ spent years gathering the science and data to prove that health conscious deserve lower rates. Over 1 million people took their Health IQ quiz and formed the basis for the scientific analysis of the relationship between health and health knowledge. They took all the years' data and science on the health conscious to the top carriers and partner with them to get the lowest rates on life insurance for the health conscious. Bottom line, you reach out, they take you on a journey, learning about your lifestyle and your choices. It's like getting good driver rates. If you're not in accidents, your car insurance should drop, damn it. So if you're healthy, if you're not sitting around on a Thursday night drinking award-winning PBRs, talking about MMA after a 14-hour work shift because you take care of yourself like you should, then you need to reach out to healthiq.com to see if you qualify. Get your free quote today at healthiq.com/road or mention the promo code road when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Look at that ad read. Just killing it. All right, listen, lot to talk about here in Atlantic City. I am rolling solo here in Atlantic City, New Jersey. There's a lot to talk about, and I want to set that all up for you very quickly. But before I do want to circle in my man, Cole Coffey. Even though he's not here with me right now, he is back home. He was in Arizona, so I wanted to kind of give him a chance to weigh in on what his thoughts were from all the action in Glendale, Arizona. I know he was exhausted. It was a busy damn week. And on the heels of Brooklyn and then that 14 fights, good Lord, I know he was done. Also, interestingly, he's been cutting interviews. We had a chance. I think we mentioned it a few months back or whatever, but we had a chance to sit down with all the cast members from the Ultimate Fighter 27 in the house right after they got in the house as the competition was starting. And we interviewed all of them. And we're rolling those out this week. You'll see those on MMA Junkie, just some quick little previews or whatever, and then we'll replay them along the way. Listen, I know a lot of people say the Ultimate Fighter's played out. I get it, man. If that's you, cool, fair enough. I understand. But to me, I still enjoy the show. I still do like the idea of guys working their way into the UFC, and I like the idea of this, all undefeated people making their way into the UFC. And to me, there's some talented guys that I had on my prospect radar to begin with, so I'm pretty fired about the season. I'll definitely be watching, but so I figured I'd just swing it out to Cole Coffey in Las Vegas, give him a few moments to weigh in on anything that caught his fancy in Arizona, as well as maybe a name or two that he feels like you might should watch out for while you're watching the Ultimate Fighter 27.
What's up, guys? Cold Coffey here, and just hopping in to give you my thoughts looking back on Arizona. Thanks for the toss, John. You know, Arizona, it was quite an ordeal. There were some really, really intense fights that went on. And again, like normal, I was stuck in the back. So I'll give you the highlights from what I saw in the back. A quick list of things that happened in the back. For dessert, there were bugs by the cookies. There were flies, but the cookies were good. If you got the ones that weren't covered in bugs, the peanut butter ones and the oatmeal raisins were especially tasty. The highlight of the menu, because I know this is what you guys really care about in the back room, was the smoked Gouda mashed potatoes. They were awesome. And there was like a little meatloaf that kind of went with it. I think there was a chicken or turkey too. But really for me, the star of the night wasn't Justin Gaethje or Dustin Poirier. It was the smoked Gouda mashed potatoes. Thanks for listening. I'm just kidding. Some other things that stand in the back. I know John talked about Dustin Poirier. Other guys that stood out for me. John Moraga was very, very excited, and it was interesting to hear from a guy that was so pumped up by Phoenix. I mean, the guy lives and breathes Phoenix. I mean, he's got it tattooed on his back, but he talked of, you know, how the crowd sort of just moved him. You know, a lot of these guys, they go in, they're so laser focused, but I asked him if the crowd kind of pumped him up, if there was a point where he actually heard the crowd kind of cheering for him and, you know, what it did for him. And he did let us know that, you know, kind of there was a moment where he kind of just let himself embrace it, you know, and he kind of got swept up in it, and he kind of just let this roar out, you know, to kind of just channel all that energy. And like we saw, you know, it was a wonderful performance. Dude came in to the back and had a huge bandage on his head and literally like gashed out a part of his forehead. You know, I asked, I was like, you know, how many stitches did it take? And he's like, well, they can't stitch it. It's just like a hole in his head. So at some point, you know, he went up against the fence and it, you know, tore a chunk out of his forehead. So hopefully, you know, that will heal up nicely for him and not leave him too scarred. Yeah, I can only imagine, you know, his head looked pretty discolored around where this bandage, and it was probably a good 3-inch by maybe 2-inch bandage that was covering a large section of his forehead. So it was interesting, you know, to kind of see that, you know, and he was taken in stride. you know, gave a great interview. So that's on the YouTube channel if you guys want to go back and look at it. Other ones that jumped out, just a couple more post-fight ones. Michelle Waterson, I thought it was a wonderful performance. And, you know, she fought and out-strategized the bigger, stronger fighter. And, you know, hearing her talk about it and just so calm and collected. And I thought she was great earlier in the week when she kind of referenced and was talking a little about the Conor outburst and, you know, what that sort of meant to people affected by it. And she just showed this smart, well-thought side that I think we forget a lot of times. You know, I think a lot of people look at these fighters and they think of them only as entertainers and they, you know, these super fit athletes. And, you know, a lot of times I think we forget how smart these people are, you know. And I don't know, maybe it's just because it's Michelle. I mean, by the end of her speech, I was like mesmerized, you know, just listening to her talk and break down the thought process and what they needed to do to beat Courtney. And it was incredible. You know, I think it part of it goes too with that fight camp that they're at. I mean, just a bunch of smart individuals that are probably some of the best strategists in the game when it comes to breaking down an opponent and really looking as to what you need to do to win. So always good to get her in the back. She was in great spirits. And just listening to her break it down, I was just in awe of you know, the performance that they put on. And man, she is one smart cookie. And then finally, the last one that really, I guess I was just sort of happy for and, you know, kind of gave us a little highlight of the night was when Brad Tavares came back. I was happy to see him get a finish. You know, he's had some decisions the last few times around, so it was good for him to get a definitive finish and a really good looking one. You know, Brad being here from Vegas, we see him all the time. He's always been really good with his time. So, again, he gave us a great interview earlier in the week. And, you know, we never pull favorites, but, you know, when fighters take the time to really, you know, go above and beyond to give us interviews, you know, when they could easily say no and you know, just worry about the fight, I always appreciate it. You know, and part of you is like, oh, I hope he does well. Not that you ever really trying to pull for someone to win or lose, but you tend to hope for fighters to do well, you know, when they really make your job a lot easier. And so I thought he had a great performance. And one of the highlights of when he was backstage, you know, I asked him, you know, if he had a chance to you know, if he gotten any response from the Bisping call out that he gave post fight. And he said, it's funny enough, you know, you guys don't know this, you know, but I went into the green room and talked to Bisping and and he, you know, said how he wanted to have the fight or whatever. You know, he said Bisping was polite enough. Then he was like, get the fuck out of here, in typical Bisping fashion, as you would think. So I thought that was fun to hear that. I mean, there were a lot of other great interviews that people did, but those are a few of the ones that stood out for me. But what also happened that night, which never really gets to happen, we actually, a few of us videographers in the back, even though ticket sales for the most part were pretty good. I mean, it looked good once we got out there, but we were given tickets to be able to go sit in the auxiliary seating at one point during the night. And I think right before the main, we finally got to a point where we could kind of put down and got the work that we normally do. Typically, as the fight's going on, you know, we get the post-fight interviews, and I'm cutting them. You know, I'm working, I'm watching the fights as I can and cutting it videos. So pretty much working nonstop. But we got to a point where it was at a good stopping point. But we were able to go out into the crowd in the sort of the mid-level bowl area and got to watch the fight of Justin Gaethje and Dustin Poirier. And it was awesome. It was great to kind of get, you know, swept up a little bit in the crowd atmosphere. It sucks because the seats were kind of narrow, and that's just because I have giant legs with a giant ass that sometimes makes it tough to fit in these skinny ass seats that a lot of these venues have, you know, when they try to put a ton of people in. So that was fun, but it was awesome, always awesome to get into the arena and get kind of caught up in the emotion. So we got to watch that almost immediately, since we had to take a little bit of a hike to get to the seats, you know, immediately as they were going in and stopping the fight after Dustin got those last significant strikes. And and they were going in to stop it. We're pretty much up of our out of our seats and already making our way back to the media room so we can get down in time to get the post-fight interview with the last final winners. But it was a great night. It was a good night. So, again, John touched upon something else I've been kind of working on this week. You know, before we had before this tough season had started, you know, the new Tough 27 season, which just aired last night, we went to the Tough House and did some tough interviews. So today, the past few days, or past couple of days, I've been processing some of those interviews that will be rolling out. Actually, a couple of them, I think, came out today. And we'll have a couple more coming out tomorrow from the fighters that are going on tomorrow. But good bunch of cast. I mean, it doesn't seem like initially on face value that we're going to get a lot of drama like we've seen in past seasons. I think that could be a good thing, but you know, I'm sure the TV producers are hoping for a little bit of drama. I know that the show, some of the ratings at times have declined over seasons and then had spikes for certain reasons. And again, with this season, trying to do the undefeated, trying to put, you know, another little spin on the show to try to create a little more interest in it. I mean, let's be real. The way they do the show, it's a great formula. It works. It's not like they need to now start shooting the show in 3D with crazy noir lighting and dark backdrops and everything. That's not gonna change it, fix it. You know, I'm not opposed to the format. You know, I wouldn't say that there's anything particularly wrong with it. I just think, as with anything, you know, if there's just something over and over and over and over, interest can wane a little bit. But characters are always something that keeps you interested, and there's definitely some characters to kind of keep in mind that I think are going to either, you know, people are going to love them. I don't know about hate them, because there's nobody that I've seen so far. I think people are going to just really hate. There's a couple I think I would probably push the line, but a couple guys that a few off the top that I think people will be drawn to either by just, you know, wanting to see them get beat up, or just like, is this guy for real? My top three guys to really pay attention when it comes to that is Dulani Perry. The Dulani, I believe he's the Karate God Perry or something along those lines. This guy, he's a self-proclaimed fashionista. You know, he likes to bring it from the, you know, the walkways of fashion as well as the streets. When you see him in one of these interviews, he has this nice flashy jacket, but then he's got his like wool, winter cap that, you know, you always see all the hipsters wear, during the summer, even when you're like, how are you wearing that hat? You're crazy. You know, so he combines it. He pulls it off. So Dulani Perry, I think, is one of the guys, and he's one of the guys that showed up at the rehearsal and had two girls already with him. So as we're doing an interview, he's like, can I have my girls in it? You know, so he had the two girls off to the sides during the interview. So I knew there was something with this guy. So I'm interested to see how his personality plays out this season. Another guy that I think a lot of people are either just going to dig what he's bringing, or they're just going to be annoyed to all get out, and that's Tylan Clark. This is a guy that I want to say he said he was from Wichita, Kansas, and but speaks like he's from, you know, somewhere Southside LA or something. You know, he's an interesting individual, and I apologize if I got his hometown wrong, but he's another guy that, you know, feels that he can be a guy like Conor McGregor that can be packing arenas and, you know, bring in the crowds. And his whole thing is, you know, he's like, you know, he wants to get through the show. He knows the show can put a lot of wear and tear on the body, so he's not trying to go out there and get the crazy finishes during the show. He's just trying to win and make it through. But then he's like, you know, once I start getting that UFC cash, Dana, then I'll show you, you know, so pay for the finishes. So interesting character, but you know, it's got some strong claims to say that you're going to be bringing it like Conor McGregor. You know, I think anytime you start saying something like that, and if he does say it in fact on the show, I think that's the kind of stuff you're going to get a lot of people really jumping on him, you know, about every little thing that he does. So I hope he performs well, you know, because there's some bold claims. And then there is Luis Pena, the violent Bob Ross. You know, when you see him with his flowing hair and big bushy beard. And it's funny. He's like, everybody likes to say that's because of the hair. You know why people call me Bob Ross? But he says it's because his fighting is like Bob's painting. It's like cool, calm, and collected. Yeah, man. Just some happy little KOs, you know, in a happy little submission. Yeah, that's what we need. No, but he's an interesting guy, Luis Pena. So another guy to kind of watch out for. And I don't want to make this too long. I got to hop it back over to John here in a second. But another couple guys I think to watch is a couple SBG guys, Richie Smolin and Brad Katona. Brad Katona is the guy that's already been slotted to fight on next week's episode. So he's like the quiet, reserved guy with the glasses, you know, that played chess with his father and doesn't have a lot of, you know, free time, or doesn't do a lot in his free time. You know, pretty much picked up his life and moved to Dublin, Ireland to train. So anybody that's willing to do a lot of that and go that far in is definitely something you got to watch out for. Bryce Mitchell, Southern kid from Arkansas, or Arkansas, if you will, talked about, you know, how he used to do a lot of backyard brawls and barbecue, which you had me at barbecue. He's an interesting character with a Southern drawl, you know, but he looks like he could be placed in California and be a, you know, somebody in Uriah Faber's camp and would fit perfectly. So I'm hoping this kid kind of pans out. You know, I dig his story and hope he does well. There's Mike Trezano, who says he's a lone wolf going in there to feast on the flesh of his opponents. Just imagine that, feasting. So, yeah, so interesting characters. And then finally, a couple guys that I think you saw at the end of the last episode that were really chatting. Sort of even though it was more like DC setting it up, and I kind of feel bad for Suman Mokhtarian, whose brother fights in the UFC, but DC kind of threw him under the bus with Tyler Diamond. He didn't really even say anything, but somehow it kind of gets seemed that at the end, like that Tyler thinks Suman was calling him out, which he actually wasn't. But in the creative way that editing works and how random shit gets started, there might be some beef that we're just going to have to blame on DC later on. So there's a few names for you guys to kind of check out with Tough 27. We're going to be having interviews rolling out throughout the next week, and then we'll bring them back out again when the guys have their fights coming on. So that should be good. So look for all that good stuff. So I hope you guys enjoy that Tough 27 stuff. But before I let you guys go, and before I toss it back to John, do you guys wear contact lenses? You know, I know a lot of people that wear contact lenses, but if you wear contact lenses and find yourself dreading that annual appointment to renew your prescription, then you're going to love Simple Contacts. It's a great new company that makes this annoying process very, well, simple. Simple Contacts lets you renew your expired contact lens prescription and reorder your brand of lenses from your phone or computer in minutes. Simple Contacts brings the doctor's office to wherever you are, whenever you need it. You can take the Simple Contacts vision test online in 5 minutes. A real doctor reviews it and renews your prescription. You save time, you save money, and you save yourself a headache. And if you have an unexpired prescription, just upload a photo of it to your doctor's info and order your lenses in minutes for a great price. They do all the hard work for you. This is vision care for the 21st century. Simple Contacts offers every brand of lenses and the prices are unbeatable. The prescription is just $20. Compare that with an annual appointment, which can be up to $250 without insurance. They have some of the best prices on contacts and shipping is free. Best of all, our listeners get $30 off their first Simple Contacts order. To save $30 on your lenses, just go to simplecontacts.com/road or enter the code ROAD at checkout. I want to mention that this isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. Go get your health exam, folks. You'll still need those occasionally, but this is the most convenient way to renew a prescription and reorder your contacts if your vision hasn't changed. Again, check out Simple Contacts and get $30 off by going to simplecontacts.com/road or just enter ROAD at checkout. Give it a try and thank us later. Thanks a bunch, guys. I'm going to put you back over to John. So Have a good day, guys.
All right, so there you go. The man, Cole Coffey, holding it down like only he can do. Bringing you that inside knowledge like only he can do. Just being Cole Coffey like only he can be. All right, so let's talk about UFC Fight Night 128 in Atlantic City. First of all, let's talk about Atlantic City. If you've never been to Atlantic City, New Jersey, I don't want to be rude. I know I'm a West Coast guy. I'm a Vegas guy. And I know this, you know, has a special place in a lot of people's hearts. But, I mean, let's just be honest. Atlantic City is a little bit of a ghost town, especially right now. It is the off season. I mean, this is not Vegas where you do get the kind of year-round good weather. So, you know, you've got these casinos, you've got these resorts, you've got these restaurants, and, you know, in a lot of people's eyes, it is kind of like Vegas, but you don't get the luxury of being year-round. So that's a huge, hard part about, you know, Atlantic City being big and thriving and all that. The other part is, and I imagine it probably has a lot to do with the fact that it is a regional destination, but it's hard to get here. It is not easy to get here. I've been out here. God, man, I think the first time I came out here, if I remember right, that may not be right. But one of the early times I remember coming out here was doing a commentary of an M1 Global event with Mike Straka. Man, that's been a while. We were at the Tropicana. God, I forgot. That's been a while, man. Did that? I can't even remember how long ago that was. Then I remember being out here with Dan Stupp, back when Dan Stupp used to travel for an Elite XC event. And then I believe we caught a Ring of Combat event at the time. So it's been a while. So we've been coming out here for a while. I don't come out here a lot. I don't know the East Coast a lot. But those are some of the early memories I have. And it was a little bit more happening then, I guess. And, of course, a couple years ago, we were here at the Revel for the Cowboy and Jim Miller fight. And the Revel is actually closed right now. It's reopening in a couple of weeks. So, bottom line, it's had its ups and downs, especially in recent years. And it's not hard to research. It's financially struggling out here. But here's what it boils down to: is that it's not easy to get to. I think that's a huge problem for it. So there is, believe it or not, I was told one direct flight a day, I think, from Vegas to – there is an Atlantic City airport. It's a very small airport, but it's not that far away. But it's on Spirit Airlines, and yeah, not – I mean, maybe I'm a little bit bougie when it comes to air travel. I will say American Airlines and One World treats me pretty good. But yeah, the Spirit Airlines, I don't think anybody took that flight. So from Vegas, what you have to do, what most everybody did – was fly to Philadelphia. So you fly to Philadelphia and you land in Philadelphia, and then you still have like an hour and 15 minutes maybe or so, more or less, once you get into a car. Now, if you've got to rent a car, that adds time, all that. So it's just not easy to get here. But I actually came in early. I found a cheaper flight. If I came in, I took a red eye on Tuesday morning. I flew out at 1:15 in the morning. I landed, I want to say, a little after 9 a.m., here in Philadelphia, and then knew I had to drive to Atlantic City. But I didn't have anything to do on Tuesday. So what I did was I decided, you know what, I looked at renting a car, but renting a car was going to be like $250, $300. And I don't really need a car. Like, since I've been here, I haven't left the hotel. I haven't left the property. I'm actually staying at Bally's, which is the host hotel. So I haven't left except to go to the open workouts the other day, which there was a shuttle over there. So I didn't really need a car. Then you got to pay for parking. So I thought, well, I'll just take an Uber. Well, an Uber from Philadelphia to Atlantic City is about $150 one way. So now you're talking about $300 round trip Uber. And that's a lot to pay. So I thought, well, listen, I'm not in a big rush. So let me do the company a solid. I will jump on a train. I knew there was a train. I had heard before there was a train. I'd never taken it before, but I'd heard there was a train that goes from Philadelphia to Atlantic City, right on the edge of Atlantic City. And then, of course, from there, you can take an Uber or a taxi or whatever. It's going to cost you a couple bucks. So I said, well, I'll do that. And I priced it out, and the train ride was going to be $19 from Philadelphia to Atlantic City, $19. Then you take like a $5 Uber. Damn, just saved $125 for the company. Because I'm a company guy. That's what I'm trying to do, right? Okay, so I land. I took the red eye. I didn't sleep that well on the way. So I'm a little bit tired, but whatever. It is what it is. Once I get checked in, I'll get some sleep. So get on the train. You take the train from the Philadelphia airport to the 30th Street station. So you kind of go into downtown Philadelphia, basically, to kind of this old big station. You see a little bit of the train tracks along the way, and then you get there. And once you get in, then you got to go find the train that's going to Atlantic City. So I run in. I'm like, hey, where'd I go to Atlantic City? They point me in the right direction. You got to go buy a ticket over here, and then it's platform 10. Like, cool, all right. So I ran over to go buy the ticket, and they're like, oh, platform 10, go right now. Go right now. It's about to take off. I'm like, oh, look at the luck. I don't know how often this train runs, but I'm getting off the train, and I'm jumping right on the other train. So I jump on the other train, and sure enough, I'm sitting there like maybe 3 minutes total, and then the train takes off. And I'm like, man, can't believe I didn't do this every time. Every time I've been to Atlantic City, I've taken a car, I've rented a car, I've done ground transportation. Why didn't I just do this damn train? So we start chugging along on the train. And after about 15 minutes or so on this train, and it's supposed to take about an hour, 15 minutes or so, which is, I mean, it's not a fast train. We're not talking about a bullet train in Japan. We're talking about, you know, an old train that's kind of going through residential neighborhoods. It's supposed to take about an hour and 15 minutes. But I'm like, whatever, right? I'll just bust out my laptop. I'll answer some emails. I'll get some work done. Who cares, right? I could kill time. But about 15 minutes in, they say, hey, by the way, and it's the train. I mean, this is an old train, and it's the conductor voice that doesn't really care about communicating to like 17 people that are on the train. So it's not exactly the clearest message ever, but it's basically like, I sounded like I was trying to do some ridiculous foreign language. I wasn't, but it was muffled like that is the point that I'm getting at. You see what I'm saying? But what I gathered is, like, hold on, this train, which is the direct line to Atlantic City, is not going to go all the way to Atlantic City. And so they repeat it. And I listen in a little bit. Man, that was terrible. I'm not even going to try to do that anymore. It sounds like I'm doing a horrible trying to foreign language voice. But basically what it boiled down to was, we were going to get to a station, and at that station, we were going to have to get off the station and jump on a bus to take the bus the rest of the way to Atlantic City. Now, I'm trying to save money. I'm trying to do the right thing, right? I mean, you guys know, Cold Coffee's not here with me because we're cutting back on travel finance. We're watching every dollar. We're pinching pennies, man. I'm trying to do my part. So I said, all right, well, again, I got nothing to do on Tuesday. My whole plan was to get in, kind of settle in, put my notes together for my interview. I always do like to have notes for my interviews. Just kind of remind yourself of anything. So I just planned on coming in, getting my research done, all that. I'll jump on this bus. So we're still chugging along, getting to the station where we're going to stop. And finally, the conductor walks through, or at least the train collector guy. I don't know if that's technically the conductor, but he's checking tickets, right? And I'm like, hey, by the way, you said in that very clearly enunciated message earlier that we were going to have to take the 554 bus from this station to Atlantic City. Is that right? And he said, yeah, that's right. I said, okay, how long does that take? And he's like, forever. And I was like, okay. You can't even like look at me with a straight face and say, I was like, all right, well, when you say forever, how long are you talking? He was like, like an hour and a half, 2 hours. And I'm like, whoa. I jumped on a train that was supposed to take an hour and 15 minutes, and I'm going to get about 30 minutes into the journey, and now you're going to throw me in a bus that's going to take an hour and a half to 2 hours? Because apparently this bus is not a direct bus. It's just a local bus that stops at, like, you know, all these little stations. And I'm like, all right, I'm out. I can't do it. So I was like, I'm just going to see what an Uber costs. What does an Uber cost from this station to Atlantic City? I pulled it up. It was about $75. Now, the only bad thing is I suddenly remember at this point in Brooklyn – my corporate credit card was shut down while I was in Brooklyn. And fortunately, thank God, they reopened it, because I don't know how the hell I would have paid for hotel rooms in New York out of my pocket because that ain't happening. I had mine and Cold Coffee's rooms on there. And, yeah, bro, journalist, check the check, son. Check the check. So I was not going to be able to pay for 2 weeks of hotel rooms. So anyway, fortunately, they reopened it. But for whatever reason, Uber hadn't actually it was still seeing my card as closed, and I'd been trying to deal with Uber. By the way, have you ever tried to find a phone number for customer service for Uber? It doesn't exist. Like, I love Uber. I'm a Uber fan. But try to get a customer service person on the phone. Try. And report back to me. All right, so I got to make a decision at this point. I mean, I can't go out of pocket. I mean, I can go out of pocket $75 and get reimbursed later, but I didn't want to do that. So now I downloaded Lyft for the first time. So I downloaded the app at Lyft. Turns out Lyft was only going to be $65, and it did recognize my new credit card. So I took a Lyft from that station. So the way I got to Atlantic City from Las Vegas is a flight to Philadelphia, a train into Philadelphia, a train to a bus station, and then a Lyft from the bus station to Atlantic City. My point is, it's not easy to get here. It's not easy to get here. All right? If they would make it easier to get here. Here's what they need. Here's what I think they need. What they need is you land in Philadelphia, you take a train, but that train is owned by the hotels. It's a direct train. It goes fast. While you're on there, you grab a cocktail or two. There's computers on there that check you into your room so that when you arrive, you've already got a room key, or at the very least, you're on the waiting list and they've already got your credit card and your phone number and your information and all that. That way you can just go, start having a good time. You have a cocktail on the way. And then you just, you know, check in with it. Just a thought. So that's Atlantic City. That's what it is. So you might say, what the hell is the USC doing here in Atlantic City? So I'll be honest. We had been so tied up in Brooklyn and then Glendale and then this. It had kind of flown under my radar, too, that this was Boardwalk Hall. Boardwalk Hall is an old venue, right? It's a historic venue, especially from a boxing perspective. But this is not the Revel. This is not any of the modern hotels. This is the old Boardwalk Hall. What is Boardwalk Hall recalled? Does anybody think about that? Anybody test your UFC history? Huh? How about all the way back in 2003? That was the first time a UFC was at Boardwalk Hall. UFC 41, which is kind of cool considering this is the 25th anniversary year, right? I mean, the UFC is trumping up the 25th anniversary year, and now they're back in Boardwalk Hall, but they didn't really sell any of that. I think they missed. I think they get just as busy as we do, and they just didn't think about it. But they could have hyped that up, like, hey, we're visiting this historic venue. But basically, my understanding is the city of Atlantic City, or maybe it's the state of New Jersey, I'm not sure, but they're investing money in acts, you know, in entertainment. Basically, they're helping subsidize the hotels and everything here. Basically, they're trying to reinvent everything here and try to revitalize, I guess. And I think the UFC was identified as part of that, and they were given some money. They were given a little grant from the local area to, hey, come hold your event here, and help us revitalize the area, show that it's still a major entertainment destination. So that's why the UFC is here. It does sound like ticket sales are doing pretty good. Walk through Boardwalk Hall the other day. It's an old venue. But it is pretty cool. And talking to some of the guys here, you know, that are from the New Jersey area, you know, they grew up, you know, watching wrestling matches here, watching fights here, watching, you know, Gotti fight here. I mean, it's pretty cool stuff. So it is cool, but it sounds like they've got a scale for maybe 11,000 seats or so. Probably going to be a sellout by the time things happen. Ticket sales are going pretty well. So that's kind of what's going on here. I will say, before we get into the fights themselves, let me just tell you about my first night, by the way. So we go through all that. We get settled. I do a little work. Everything's good. And then finally go lay down to get some sleep. And, I had taken some naps the afternoon, a little quick naps, a little power naps the afternoon, because it was, you know, one of those days. Finally lay down to sleep about 1:30. And then at 3:30, I hear this.
Run to the nearest exit and leave the building.
Oh,
emergency reported in the building. Proceed immediately in an orderly manner. Do not run to the nearest exit and leave the building. Attention, attention. There has been an emergency reported in the building. Proceed immediately in an orderly manner. Do not run to the nearest exit and leave the building.
Yeah, man. Good luck sleeping through that. Oh, man. You know, it's funny. You hear that go off and you think, ah, come on. It's nothing, right? False alarm, false alarm. But it kept going off. It kept going off for several minutes. And I kept hearing people get out. You know, it's 3:30 in the morning. I hear people leaving their hotel rooms. I'm like, maybe I should go check this out. So I get out, put my clothes on, you know, put my jacket on because it's kind of chilly here. Shoes in case we do have to go outside, you know, get fully dressed, not just like pajamas down there or whatever. Get down there, and as soon as I get out, I don't go down the elevator. I go down the stairs. I'm on the fourth floor, so it's not, you know, not that many stairs down. And when I get down there, I see a couple of people that are dressed in like the yellow police vest type things, you know, the emergency vest type thing. And they're talking to some people in front of me, some older folks, because there are some elderly folks here in the Atlantic City area. And, you know, I hear them telling them, like, ah, it's a false alarm. Sorry, there's nothing going on. You can go back to your rooms. And so I hear that, and I'm like, all right, whatever. So I turn around, walk back up the stairs, go into my room. As I'm walking down the hall, I see a USC production guy that we work with quite often. He's like, oh. He's like, funny seeing you. He's like, are you walking out or what? And I'm like, bro, don't even worry about it. I just went down there. It's a false alarm. It's good. You're good. Go back to your bed. They said it's no big deal. He's like, oh, cool, man. I am so glad I ran into you. Now I don't even have to go downstairs. That's what's up, bro. Thank you. I'm like, oh, cool. Thanks, bro. Then I go back into my room, and the thing keeps going for like 20 minutes. And at first, it's just kind of annoying. I'm like, oh, I just want to go back to sleep. But then I start having this thought, like, you know, when I walked down there, I didn't really question anybody or ask anybody. Like, I mean, I heard these people that look like they were emergency people, like, telling other people it's fine. But I didn't really, like, ask for a badge or ask for any more specific information. In fact, I didn't even ask them the information myself. I just overheard them talking to somebody else, and I took them at their word that quick. I mean, like, if you were an arsonist setting blaze to a hotel, wouldn't, like, the gangster-level move be to stay in there afterwards and tell people, like, no, you're safe. Go back to your room. So I got kind of nervous for a little bit, and then I thought, dude, if I have made a horrible mistake, like, I've got to pay for my own horrible mistake. But now my man over here who has listened to me, who thinks that I'm a trustworthy individual, who, I mean, that's on his judgment there, but who thinks I'm a trustworthy individual has listened to me as well, and now he's going to perish along with me. And I felt kind of guilty for a while, and I almost got up and went back downstairs to re-verify everything. But, I mean, we are talking about, like, four flights of stairs. So eventually the alarm went off. So yeah, Atlantic City. All right. All that said, we got a pretty damn good fight card to look at, right? I'm excited about this card. I really am. I do think that the main event is a fantastic one. Edson Barboza versus Kevin Lee in the main event. It means a lot in the lightweight division. I do think, and both guys have been saying, listen, I'd like a shot at the belt. I'd like to maybe mean something. Of course, Kevin Lee would have probably the inside track if he won, and he won impressively, at least over Barboza. Barboza, of course, lost to Nurmagomedov pretty handily recently. So you have a hard time thinking that if he won, he'd have a case. But Kevin Lee, marketable guy. Was already in, you know, booked in for a title fight anyway. You know, likes to talk. I mean, he'd at least be in there. Still think Eddie Alvarez is right there. He's got a good case, and I really do feel like Dustin Poirier has a good case. So it's going to be a stretch, but nonetheless, it's a big, big fight in the lightweight division. A clash of styles, all right? Edson Barboza, of course, got dismantled by Khabib Nurmagomedov. I mean, that was such an impressive performance by Nurmagomedov. And listen, I ended up in my stat pick going with Kevin Lee. I mean, I do feel like, I don't want to say that's the blueprint or there was a flaw exposed. We've always known Barboza is an incredible striker, but if there's a weakness, it's the wrestling game. You know, can Kevin Lee replicate that? Can he do the same thing? We'll see. I mean, he certainly has the capabilities. Kevin is I will say it's refreshing this week. I mean, he's talking a little bit. He's saying a little bit of whatever. But it's not the same level that him and Tony Ferguson was at. And the Tony Ferguson stuff was starting to get a little bit exhausting. Man, I appreciate Kevin for being the salesman that he is. And again, we're talking about the hype era, you know, the Conor McGregor era, where this is the way you turn heads, you know, the Chiesa fight, all the hype that was around that because of what happened between Lee and Chiesa. I mean, yes, it's there. It's there. I get it. But you know, I like this build-up to this fight. I do, because to me it's less about trash talk and disrespect and more about two guys that aren't necessarily number one contenders right now, but that are certainly elite-level fighters, and the clash of styles. The old-school striker versus grappler element, it's there. Of course, everybody is well-rounded at this point, and Edson Barboza has made it clear, listen, that Khabib Nurmagomedov fight pissed me off too. It upset me. I asked him, I said, listen, do you at least take a little bit of solace out of it, right? Because, I mean, when we watched that fight, didn't we all just go, man, God, Khabib's a monster, but Edson, tough as nails. Kudo, bravo, you know, you could have given up, and he could have. I mean, at any time, there's that move where you turn over and you give up your back and you let your neck sit there and you kind of pull away at the hands, but you go, oh, the grip is just too tight. I can't do it. You know what I mean? That's like it's the way of tapping without tapping. And Edson could have done that at any point along the way. He never did it. You know, was pushing until the very end. And he said, listen, that doesn't mean anything to me. I'm not taking any moral victories. I don't feel good about that. I hate it. And I want to prove that that'll never, ever, ever happen again to me. And I like that attitude. Meanwhile, Kevin Lee, I mean, I do think this guy has a huge future. I mean, I think Kevin Lee is going to be around for a long time. Still so young, still developing, still getting better as a fighter, and still kind of finding his role. And I think he's going to be around for a long time in big fights. And I think this is a big moment for him. You know, maybe a win here and Kevin Lee gets either Eddie Alvarez or Dustin Poirier based on who doesn't get Khabib Nurmagomedov. And again, I'm saying all this assuming that Conor McGregor is going to be out for a while. Let me just clarify that in case there's any confusion, because there's no question about it. If Conor McGregor comes back, of course, Conor McGregor jumps to the top of the line right away. He is the fight. He is the biggest star in the sport. So when I say these things, I am saying I assume that Conor is going to have some legal battles that are going to keep him out for a little while. So if that is the case, then I think Kevin Lee would be, you know, a rightful number one contender against either of those guys that doesn't move forward and doesn't get the title shot. Kevin Lee has said, listen, you know, and I think it's easy to just say, hey, won't you do what Khabib did? Isn't that going to be your goal? And I think, you know, you never want to tip your hand. You know, you want to say, but I've got a few wrinkles. I've got some things I'm going to do different. I think that's, of course, that's the, you know, you never want to give away your game plan entirely. Even if we know your grappling is your specialty, you never want to give it away entirely. And, of course, Kevin Lee works hard on the striking. And he's saying, listen, you know, I want to take it to him. He's basically kind of suggesting he'll stand and trade at least a little bit with Edson Barboza. Think that would be a huge mistake. Let me just say that. Think that would be a huge mistake. Yes, Kevin Lee is a fantastic athlete, and he's certainly an incredible fighter, and his striking is coming along great. But Edson Barboza is on a different level, man. Those leg kicks are nasty, and you don't want to take one of those if you don't have to. So looking forward to this fight for sure. It's a big fight in lightweight division. It's crazy how many lightweight fights we've had right in a row. If you get a chance, we did put up the open workout footage the other day. There was a funny moment. Really small venue. We were at Boardwalk Hall, but we were in kind of a small section of it. But Kevin Lee did his open workout, and then he actually let first a little tiny kid come up and kick him in the body. And everybody kind of got a huge kick out of that. Like, ah, man, you put little, you know, you put shin guards on this kid and you let him kick you. Like, wow, good for you. That's funny, you know. And I was bummed because I was sitting in the back waiting for an interview. And I didn't really get to see it, but I could hear it and I could kind of see it through the screen. But then he's like, oh, somebody else come up here. And he picks another kid. And this is a pretty sizable kid. I mean, not an old kid, but he was probably, you know, 9 or 10, you know. It wasn't like a little tiny kid like the first one was. And we've got the video up. I put it up on Twitter and social media and Facebook and all that. But the other kid, and he gives him five kicks. He kicks him in the body five times. Like, Kevin Lee just kneels down and lifts his hands over his head. He's like, kick me in the body. Kick me in the body. And this kid does it to him five times. And some of them were decent. Some of them looked like they were about to go a little bit low and kick him in the balls. But it was funny because you're like, oh, man, this is kind of cool. Kind of risky. Like, what if the dude just hits it just right and cracks a rib or something? Like, holy shit. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? It made me think. I remember this is a while back, but if you guys ever saw this footage, Holly Holm did an open workout in Australia before the fight with Ronda Rousey, and she brought a fan up on stage, and she had the fan like punch and kick at her. And I mean, you don't know what the fan's gonna do. Like, I mean, you talk to fighters. The funny thing is about fighting people that don't know how to fight is sometimes they can catch you because they move so weird. They do stuff they're not supposed to do. Like, they don't move in the rhythm they're supposed to move in. They don't. Their body doesn't do what it's supposed to do, what you can expect to do. If you've ever sparred in a gym, I mean, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Like, you sometimes get caught by newcomers. That's why fighters won't spar with newcomers, because like, I don't know what to expect from you. And Holly Holm did this, and I remember, like, PR just freaking out. Can you imagine? I mean, what a historic night that was. Holly Holm knocked out Ronda Rousey. Can you imagine if that fight was lost because some, like, fan cut her over the eye or something? So that was kind of running through my head here with the little kid. But it was funny. So, again, this was kind of a small venue. So they came back in the back, and, you know, I heard people kind of asking Kevin, like, what the hell are you thinking? And you know, here's this. Kevin has just made this kid's day, right? Like, I mean, my son got to hit pads with Junior Dos Santos just, you know, by chance or whatever with where he was standing at an open workout in Dallas. And, like, he still talks about it to this day. So he just made this kid's day, right? But people are asking him, what the hell? And I actually heard Kevin say, oh, I knew he couldn't kick. I looked at him. I knew he couldn't kick. I'm like, well, first of all, you don't know that, Kevin. You don't know that. But then it's kind of funny because you're kind of trash-talking the guy. You brought the kid up there and you made his life. And now you're like, oh, I wasn't worried, man. That kid can't kick for nothing. So fun main event. I'm excited for this one. Multiple interviews with Edson Barboza and Kevin Lee. Listen, I've talked to – we had Kevin Lee at the Performance Institute. We've got a long scrum up on YouTube if you want to check that out. Edson Barboza, I did a sit-down with him where he kind of talked about a lot of these things. Then, of course, we had them both at the open workouts, and then we had them both again today at a media day. So a lot of footage with Edson Barboza and Kevin Lee if you want to go check it out. Co-main event, Frankie Edgar versus Cub Swanson. Listen, no way to get around this. I'm excited for this fight. Crazy. You know, I had a lot of people ask me why isn't this main event? Don't forget, the main event was already announced, okay? Frankie Edgar and Cub Swanson, had this been announced first, maybe it would have been the main event over Edson Barboza and Kevin Lee. Maybe it would have been the main event over Edson Barboza and Kevin Lee. I don't know. Tough to say. I mean, Frankie Edgar is a legend, and he's about an hour away from Toms River, New Jersey, where he's from. You know, I know he's coming off the loss and all that, but probably would have been the main event, yeah. But not going to be the co-main event, and I think that's okay. Interesting build-up for this fight from both sides, right? Frankie Edgar had the loss to Brian Ortega, and it wasn't that long ago. Everybody's questioned about it. Everybody along the way this week, you know, in the you know, interviews before here that we've been here, everybody's asking about, why did you do this? Why did, you know, come on, man, come on. And I think it's a fair question. And he says, listen, I wasn't out. My brain was fine. I'm good. I know how I feel. And I respect all that. But then add in, too, you know, his father passed away as well. Man, his father passed away as well in the weeks leading up to this. Man, you add that in as well. Frankie wanted to fight New Jersey, man. It was special to him. It meant a lot to him. His kids were here at the open workouts. Man, this is where he's from. You know, he remembers coming to Boardwalk Hall. He was supposed to – the state tournament, he shared with us today, the state wrestling tournament for New Jersey is at Boardwalk Hall every year. But the 2 years that he qualified, it was held somewhere else because the place was being renovated. So, like, he felt like he missed out on that. You know, he said he came and watched Gotti fights when he was a kid, and you know, he didn't get the opportunity to fight there and to wrestle there, I should say, and so it meant something to him. He did, interestingly enough, which is awesome. You know, Frankie Edgar and we put out a piece on this, but Frankie Edgar and Jim Miller fought each other at Boardwalk Hall. Now, it was a smaller section. It's not the main hall of Boardwalk Hall. It was a smaller, like, theater within Boardwalk Hall, big venue. But they fought each other in this venue, which was awesome. There's a cool little story. Ben Folks put a cool little story together. And we talked to both guys about it. It's pretty neat to hear about it happen. So a lot of history here, man. It's a special moment. Frankie doesn't know if he'll ever get a chance to fight New Jersey again. He said, listen, this is going to be a great night for me, and I'm stoked for it. But he's been through a lot, man. He's been through a lot. He had the knockout. He says it wasn't a clean knockout, but you still have to wonder. He dominated Cub Swanson out, but, you know, then he has the personal tragedy as well. And you know, I just asked him, like, don't you feel that? Maybe there were just things telling you, like, get out, man. Frankie, this isn't right. And he said, no, man, this is who I am. And, you know, specifically about his father, I said, you know, he basically responded. He said, listen, if I was a plumber, I'd go to work the next day, right? Like, I don't get to just take off and not go to work because my father passes away. And, it's, man, that's why we love Frankie Edgar. He is a damn legend, man. He really is. But this is a scary spot. Now, if you want to counterbalance that, Cub Swanson – of course, he beat Cub before, but that was, you know, what, 4 years ago? Are they the same fighters? Man, both of them matures. I mean, the sport is always developing. Everybody's getting better, right? So are they the same fighters? No, of course. Neither one of them's the same fighter. You know, and if either one of them shows up the exact same way they showed up that night, they're getting beat, period, because the sport's always evolving. The fighters are always evolving. But, I mean, Cub was Cub was out, man. He was almost done. You know, he was going to go to – my understanding is he was going to go to the Professional Fighters League. He was in deep negotiation with them. And, I mean, million-dollar tournament? Not a bad idea, right? Not a bad idea. Go try to vie for that million real quick. But, you know, he had basically decided, yeah, I'm done. And it shocked me because, you know, when Cub admitted that, you know, his contract was over and he was going to renegotiate and all that stuff, I mean, of course, I thought it meant something, but I thought it was just strategic negotiating, that I thought he was going to be a Zuffa lifer. And he said, no, you know, I'd kind of reached that point where I had decided that I was done, that I was out, and, you know, it was okay with me. I was moving on to the next chapter of my life. I was thinking about family. So how much was he really training? How much was he staying sharp? Now, he says, listen, I'm training all the time. You know, it's basically training in my family, and I believe that. But there's a difference between going to the gym every day and going to the gym getting ready to fight Frankie Edgar. There's a difference between that. And we know that Professional Fighters League's tournament isn't starting for another couple of months, right? So how much was Cub Swanson training? I mean, you know, he's not going to go drink a bunch of award-winning PBRs. That's not him. That's not who he is as a person. But I don't know. So I do think there are question marks around both guys. I will say in my staff picks, I went with Cub Swanson. And to me, it's because the bigger question marks are around Frankie Edgar. It's scary, man. That knockout to Ortega, I know it. What Frankie says, and I'm not going to say I don't take him at his word, but I saw it. Man. He got finished. And statistics show and research shows and everything shows that, you know, your brain doesn't react good to getting banged up like that and then going out and doing it again. So I don't know, man. Question marks all around, but it's intriguing. Even though it's a rematch that nobody was looking for, it's intriguing to me. It's meaningful in division. It's not going to set up anything right now because we know we got Ortega versus Holloway next, right? So we're not looking for anything right now. But it does mean a lot for two real veterans of the sport. Cub says he doesn't really care about title shots anymore. He's just thinking about big fights, basically. The biggest fights he can get, and he's not going to worry about the title anymore. He's just trying to set up his family. One kid already, two more on the way. That's what he's thinking about. So, anyway, it's interesting. Didn't get a chance to speak to Frankie Edgar. I'll be honest, I tried to. You know, of course, Frankie was awesome. He talked to us his last fight out, but I was actually told that Frankie had asked, like, listen, I am jumping in on short notice. I do have a lot going on. Do me a favor. Keep my media schedule to a minimum. Certainly understand that and respect that. But I did sit down with Cub Swanson. Had a little one-on-one with him. Of course, I saw him at the other media days as well. But this is the chance when it was just me, him. One-on-one. Thought you should hear from Cub Swanson in the co-main event.
It's been 4 months since we last saw you, but it's been a busy 4 months, man. Personally, professionally, a lot of things going on. So what's the stretch been like for you?
I mean, it's been kind of a whirlwind, you know, these last 4 months. But luckily, I stayed in the gym the whole time, just kind of had fun with it, you know, helping out my teammates and my students that are, you know, pretty much like my training partners. And then, you know, got the call from the UFC and they were like, hey, you want this fight? I was like, let me talk to my coaches and, you know, talk to my conditioning coach. And it's like, hey, you think we could, you know, make this happen in pretty much 5 weeks? And they're like, yeah, if we do everything possible, you can do it, no problem. So I put in that work. So like I say, it's been a whirlwind because it's no days off. I grinded for 5 weeks.
It's crazy. It's funny because you almost didn't even get to this point, right? I mean, you were negotiating your contract. That was public knowledge. And, man, I always thought you were like a Zuffa lifer, man. I'm like, this guy's going to be here forever. You know, maybe he'll negotiate a little bit, but come on, he's going to stay here. But it sounds like you were really on the verge of maybe leaving. So what was that like for you? I mean, is that like a different mindset because now you got a family and you got – I mean, what was that thought process like?
Well, you know, I was the kind of guy that was just like, I want to put in my dues and then, you know, ask for things after I've earned them. And so that's kind of the mind frame I was in. I was like, hey, I've been here forever. I've put in the work. You know, I'm not the squeaky wheel, but, you know, take care of me, you know. And my manager's always told me since day one that this is just a platform. You know, you got to build off that. You know, what are you going to do for retirement? You know, he's a doctor. He's like, I can do this till, you know, I'm 80, 90. You can only fight till, you know, mid to late 30s. So, you know, I've always thought about that. And I'm at a point where I'm like, hey, I just started a family. I want to make sure I'm taken care of, you know, and I'm trying to make those smart moves. So that's the mind frame that I had when I was going around asking companies, you know, what you think I'm worth. And, you know, I had some really good offers, so. But, you know, the UFC made me a great offer, and, you know, I decided to come back because the money was good, and at the end of the day, my passion is here. So, passion and pay at the same time, that seemed like the right move.
Perfect solution. You mentioned your family, one kid already, two more on the way.
Yeah.
How much is that changing things for you? Because, I mean, there's just the logistics of it, right? I mean, all, what babies do to your family, to your routine, to your life, and then I guess maybe, you know, psychologically, your mindset as well. So, I mean, how much is this rapidly developing family kind of just changing you as a person?
Well, it kind of hit us by surprise. You know, no one expects twins. Identical twins. It's going to be crazy. But the first couple years, I'm expecting it to be, you know, tough, but I think after that, you know, I'm gonna have three young kids that are best friends and growing up, and I'm excited for that. And I think that's the biggest thing about becoming a veteran in the sport is what you can take on, what you can, you know, put on your back and push through. You know, when I was coming up in the WC and early UFC years for me, I couldn't, you know, didn't want to deal with anything. It's just 100% fight focus. Just the nerves and everything were just, it was a lot. And now it's, you know, the nerves are always there, but I know how to deal with it. I know how to, you know, do all the interviews and the media obligations and still take care of all the things I got to do at home, you know, the businesses and the family life. So for me, that looking back, that's all a blessing because it's just making me stronger as a person.
Very cool. So fight deal, or UFC deal gets done, right? You know, everything's good. They come to you with the name Frankie Edgar. That's the fight. I think we were all kind of scratching our heads a little bit, like, you know, why does this fight make sense? Frankie, you know, making the quick turnaround, and they've already fought before. And so, I mean, when they came to you with this fight, I mean, were you a little surprised as well?
Well, I was definitely surprised. You know, I've been asked, you know, about this recently, and I was just talking about, of all the rematches I anticipated for years, it's been Aldo, Lamas, you know, Max. So that they're all guys that, you know, those are the guys that were on my radar. For some reason, Frankie was always just kind of on a different path, fighting different people. But yeah, when his name came up, it kind of startled, you know, took me by surprise, and I was like, yeah, you know, I'd love to do that. You know, I guess he just wanted to fight here back in his hometown, and, you know, and I get it, you know, coming off a loss, you feel like, you know, man, I just made a mistake and I want to get back in there. I've been in that. I feel like, you know, the last time I fought Frankie, I lost. I wanted to get right back in there, and that was when I fought Max. You know, sometimes it's, you know, works out for you and sometimes it doesn't.
Do you let yourself, because I think as people are breaking this fight down, they're saying, okay, well, we saw it once before, but we're talking about a Frankie that just got finished. He's jumping back in there quick. I mean, Do you think about that all when you're breaking things down? And like, maybe this isn't 100% Frankie, whether it be mentally, physically, whatever. I mean, do you let yourself factor that in at all, or can you allow yourself to do that?
I mean, that's for him to stress about. You know, for me, if I would go in there thinking that I'm going to get like a 6 out of 10 Frankie and he shows up a 10 out of 10, I'm going to get beat up. So that would be dumb of me. I can only in my mind think that it was a fluke, or that, you know, that it was just one of those fights. He got lucky, and that the best Frankie Edgar is going to show up. You know, I got to go in there with that mentality. So I am.
3 straight fight of the nights for you. You know, I wonder, you know, now you got this family, right? You're talking long term. You're thinking about future, you know. Does your fighting style change at all? Does your goal change at all? I mean, are you thinking about preserving yourself a little bit more, or do you still, you know, as a fighter, do you have to separate yourself from that when you get in there?
You know, when I go in there, I just fight my fight, you know, and it's hard to be anything different. You know, I think all my decisions when it comes to my family and things like that come in my off time, and when I'm not caught up in the moment of the fight and all that stuff. So, you know, that's when I have the clearest head is between fights, and the emotions aren't in it. So when I'm in there, I'm, you know, I always, I've told some of my students this, I literally look in the mirror, and, you know, and look at myself and make sure I'm in the zone and tell myself, hey, suck it up. It's time to do the big boy things.
You had that loss to Ortega, and it was like a setback, right? I mean, but then he comes out and you look at what he's done now since. I mean, you know, picking up the win over Frankie, then, you know, turns out he's in the mix to maybe fight Khabib. So did that change things a little bit? I mean, it seemed like a big setback at the time, and now you look at it, you're like, well, that guy's at least a number one contender, if not maybe a future champion. I mean, does it feel like less of a setback now?
I do. I think, you know, more in, like, fans' eyes, you know. I felt like I was dominating that fight. I felt like I made a mistake, a stupid mistake, and it comes with my risky style. And, you know, but then after him and Frankie fought and he won, I think fans, you know, they changed their mind, and it just made it, you know, not as big of a deal. And fans were like, well, Cub was handing it to him. And so, yeah, definitely, you know, changed things. But, you know, for me, I guess it gave like a new life. And then that with the UFC's offer, like I said, I didn't expect to come back. No, I really didn't, and here I am, so I'm excited.
To say this, I mean, the goals now, like you said, I mean, you were so close to being away, and now you're here. This is a fight that nobody saw coming together, nobody expected, and yet it almost feels like, I don't say necessarily number one contender fight, but pretty close to it, right? I mean, the winner of this fight is still in a pretty nice position in the division.
I definitely think that the winner of this is in a good position. But just, you know, in saying all that, the way I'm gonna go from here on out is I owe the fans great fights. That's what I want to do, and that's all I'm focused on. So one fight at a time, great fights. Really not focused on the belt, title shot. I honestly don't even care. Just the best guys, you know, any up and comer. I've been getting called out by all kinds of guys. They always think I'm the guy to call out, and there's tons of rematches I want. Those are all the fights I want to do, you know. You never know how long I'm gonna do this, so I just focus on one fight at a time. The belt, if it comes, any of that comes, whatever, you know, I'll take it, but I'm not going to be asking for it.
Nice. Well, this will be a big fight, obviously. This counts as one of those. Give me an idea how you see this thing playing out. I mean, 3 rounds, does that change anything? I mean, are you expecting a back-and-forth war, or do you think you can go dominate? What do you expect in this fight?
My plan is to dominate. You know, I know what he does. I understand his game. I've had, you know, 30,000 hours since we fought. So, you know, I've had plenty of time to figure out his game. And I feel like with all the guys around me, you know, Juan Archuleta, TJ Dillashaw, both good wrestlers, you know, help me kind of understand what he's doing in there. I think the first time when I fought him, I didn't really understand his game. Even the way he strikes to set up his wrestling and all that. So I feel like I understand him, and I know how to pick him apart. And I feel like it's a huge chance for me to dominate and just show my progression.
All right, so Cub Swanson there, you know, had started a new phase of his career. Now he's back to where he began. This is an interesting fight with Frankie Edgar. Those top two, man, the top two fights on here, I think, are fantastic fights. Chase Sherman versus Justin Willis, the heavyweights, in the third fight. I like where they put this. You know, Chase Sherman, a guy that has had some mixed results. He came up short in China in November. Meanwhile, Justin Willis is an AKA guy that has been a little slow to get his career started. He's a guy that his name was kind of there behind the scenes for a little while, and he's finally starting to get his career rolling a little bit. Both interesting characters. Chase Sherman, you know, the social media presence certainly has gotten himself pretty well known. Justin Willis, interesting interview. If you get a chance, go check out the interview on YouTube that we did. At first, it was my first interview of the day on Wednesday. Of course, this was after the night before with the fire alarm and all that. And I don't think I was performing at my best. And Justin Willis, kind of an interesting cat, to say the least. I don't think I handled it right. So I look forward to talking to Justin Willis again at some point, because I think I kind of sucked at the start of the interview. But he's kind of an interesting cat as well. And it was kind of a It was an interesting conversation, so definitely check that out. But this is a big heavyweight fight. Both these guys kind of want to be part of that new breed in the heavyweight division. There's so many guys that are going to be exiting that heavyweight division very soon, so there's always space for a few new names. David Branch versus Thiago Majeta Santos. Man, big fight here in the middleweight division. David Branch, intense, fired up. Again, maybe go check out his interview as well. We had a scrum with him today. Menacing almost, you know, talking about how the loss that he had to Luke Rockhold was good for him. He said things had started to go a little bit Hollywood for him. He said his career started to go off the rails a little bit, had basically just kind of not been committing the way he had been committing before, not doing things the way he had done them before. The intensity he brought is something serious, man. Definitely worth checking out. You know, said the winning streak basically caused him to kind of get away from what he was doing, and he's done with that. You know, he's like, I got to get back to being me. I got to get back to being real. So some real intensity there. But Thiago Santos, man, that dude's scary. I haven't seen him this week. Crazy. I haven't seen him. I was staying at the host hotel, and usually kind of cross paths. I haven't seen him, but that's a big dude. That's going to be a good fight. Brett Johns versus Aljamain Sterling. Talked to both these guys as well. Check out the interviews on the MMA Junkie YouTube or on MMA Junkie as well. Brett Johns at 15-0, a Welshman, kind of carrying the flag for Wales. Says, listen, he wants to be the reason that a UFC event comes to Wales. It's the last of the UK properties to not get it. You know, it's been to England, of course, many times. You know, it's been to Scotland. It's been everywhere else. You know, Ireland, Northern Ireland. I know those aren't all the UK. Listen, I'm not going to lie. The United Kingdom, Great Britain, it screws me up a little bit. But I'm just saying, he wants the UFC to come over there, and he wants to be the reason to do it. And he's, man, what an honest guy he is. Great interviews with him as well, just saying, listen, man, I didn't know what I was capable of in the sport, but, you know, I continue to impress myself, and I continue to move the bar even higher. And, you know, now I'm shooting for the very, very top. So pretty cool stuff there. Meanwhile, Aljamain's a fun guy to talk to as well, man. Just you know, wears his heart on his sleeve, will always be honest with you. And Aljamain is as talented as they come, but has made some mistakes along the way. Hasn't necessarily always lived up to the expectations. One of those guys who was killing it on the regional stage up here in New Jersey and Atlantic City, but you know, has fallen short a couple times along the way. And I think this is a huge fight for both these guys, and I am incredibly intrigued by this fight. Dan Hooker versus Jim Miller rounds out the main card. Dan Hooker, you know, big fan of Dan Hooker at the Roadshow, man. He's a fight fan through and through. Loves the sport, loves breaking it down, loves talking about it, and just always has a great attitude. A good dude to shoot the shit with. And then of course Jim Miller. I mean, they don't come more blue collar. They don't come more New Jersey than Jim Miller, and it was cool to catch up with him. Extended scrum. If you go on the MMA Junkie YouTube channel, the longest scrum we did all week was with Jim Miller, because the local media is here. There's no traveling media other than myself here, so it's just me and the local media here. And of course, Jim Miller being the New Jersey guy and being the legend that he is, they gave him a lot of love. So was pretty cool stuff there. And of course he did relive the fight with Frankie Edgar, kind of what his career was like at that point. So pretty cool stuff there. Preliminary card, Alex Garcia versus Ryan LaFlair. See, Alex Garcia always got a smile on his face. He's a tough, scary dude. Meanwhile, Ryan LaFlair, a guy that I think is perennially underrated, incredibly skilled, but he struggled to get momentum going in his career. You know, injuries and other things like that have struggled, forced him to struggle to get things going. He had a great interview today where it's kind of funny. You know, he hasn't fought since the summer of last year, and he said, listen, I actually took time off because I wanted to take some time. I wanted to get hungry again. I wanted to want this. Like, I don't do this just to fight. I don't want to go out there and just have a fight, you know. Like, no. I want to go out there and this be everything to me. And he's like, I found that hunger again. I'm excited about it. So a good fight there. Alex Garcia is dangerous. But he struggles with cardio sometimes. He struggles late, you know, and Ryan LaFlair is certainly a guy that if he's firing on all cylinders can grind you and can push the pace the whole time. So that's an interesting fight. Magomed Bibilata versus Oka Sasaki. I love this fight as well. I love the lighter weight classes. I get it, man. Some people might not care, but Bibilata, you know, had the undefeated record forever. Meanwhile, Sasaki is a really talented guy that I've always, you know, hasn't always gotten the results, but stylistically, man, he's trouble. He's so long for the division. He's big, rangy. I think that's going to be a fun fight there as well. C.R. Bahadizadeh versus Luan Chagas. Those guys have flown under the radar. Corey Anderson versus Patrick Cummins. Got a chance to talk to Corey Anderson. Man, I hope I get a chance. I'm going to try to put this out tomorrow, but I love Corey Anderson has the greatest attitude, man. One of the most positive people. First of all, I every conversation I've ever had with Corey Anderson, I've enjoyed, man. I think he is one of the most positive people that you'll ever meet, and hearing him talk about the support that he gets from his wife is awesome, and all this. But he kind of talked about how fast the rise was for him in MMA, and how, you know, as he developed in the ranks, he picked up a couple of losses, and his wife, who had fought before, actually like pointed out some technical issues that he had in his striking department. He's like, listen, I never even really took striking classes. I went straight from the wrestling room to MMA training. I never really took the basics. And so that, you know, he kind of has taken the last 6 months or so to go through the basics and start out as a white belt, so to speak, and go through that. And it was amazing to hear him talk about that, because to be at the UFC level and to admit that, man, I didn't know what I was doing and I had to start over, I thought that was really cool. And I asked him, you know, was it difficult for him to be humble? And he had the greatest, you know, little story about his father, about how his father raised him. And I love it because it's so true, man. I honestly believe this. I think it's so true, and I thought it was so cool to hear that, you know, his father raised him to be humble. And even when he won the Ultimate Fighter, his father told him, like, hey, don't get full of yourself right now. You know, appreciate who you are. Amazing what you're accomplishing. You know, not beating the guy down, but just saying, don't forget where you came from. You know, those same people you passed on the way up are going to be the same people you pass on the way back down. And I mean, wow, man, valuable lessons, man, valuable information. I love hearing fatherly advice. You know, being a dad myself, you know, those are the type of lessons that I want to instill in my son. And to hear Corey Anderson talk about it was awesome. You know, I mean, pieces of advice from, I mean, my dad, I remember my, you know, for his faults and whatever along the way, the one piece of advice, you know, that he always gave to me is like, I don't care what you do as, you know, for a living, what you decide to be, but just make sure you're the best at it. You know, if you want to be a window washer, be a window washer. He's like, be the best damn window washer there is. And that always stuck with me. You know, and now I'm a workaholic because of him. So it's probably my dad's fault. But I love little pieces of fatherly advice to me that are valuable lessons. And I thought that was beautiful. Meanwhile, he's fighting Patrick Cummins, who, how do you not love Patrick Cummins? He comes in sporting the mustache today, you know, having fun with that and telling the story about, you know, his staph infection. You know, he had staph twice last year and caused him issues and how he got through that. You know, so a fight that's kind of early on the prelims that I'll definitely be paying attention to as well. On Fight Pass, Aspen Ladd versus Leslie Smith. Fun watching Aspen Ladd. I mean, she's so young. I think 23 years old, undefeated, all the confidence in the world. You know, fun to interview her because she doesn't talk. She does not give you long answers. She gives you good answers, but they're not long answers. So you better be ready for that. Meanwhile, Leslie Smith, actually talked to Leslie Smith for half an hour in her room the other day about Project Spearhead and about the unionization efforts and all that with fighters. Just like Cajun Johnson, you know, I told them both, I apologize to you that I'm bothering you on fight week. I know you're trying to get your head right, your body right, but I know these are causes that mean a lot to you, so thank you for letting me talk to you about it. And Leslie was fantastic, man. She's so well spoken about it. I mean, listen, when you get a chance, check out the full 30-minute interview. I mean, I could play it here, but you know, I just encourage you to go to YouTube and check it out. I don't want to make you sit through 30 minutes if you don't want to hear it. But if you do want to hear it, go hear it. Go listen to it, because I'm not, you know, I've never been a part of a union. I've never been, I can't speak on this like with any type of level of expertise or anything like that. But damn it, it just seems to make sense, right? Like, why shouldn't fighters be unionized? So why is there not one voice where everybody can speak together and at least, you know, have some representation, I guess? Or I mean, I guess that's the point of a manager, but man, fighting the battles over and over and over, and I don't know, man. You know, it's like these things of when fights get called off, and, you know, do you get your show money and your win money, or just your show money, or how does that work? Like, that's never going to be uniform unless it's collectively bargained somehow. And I feel like I just feel like it makes sense. Like, it should happen. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I granted, I understand unions and associations and organizations aren't perfect, man. I'm sure there's problems too, and I'm sure there's reasons, you know, the UFC hasn't, I mean, of course the UFC, I mean, nobody's going to like tell their employees to, hey, why don't you guys get together and try to come at me? You know what I mean? Nobody's going to want that. But I don't know. I just feel like these inconsistencies that we see over and over on a weekly basis where we're like, man, that needs to be fixed. Well, it's not going to get fixed by us talking about it on a podcast while we're drinking an award-winning Past Blue Ribbon. You know what I'm saying? It's gonna get fixed because people take action. And I think, you know, it just seems to me to make some sense. So maybe there's a drawback that I'm not getting, and I'm cool hearing about it. I'm totally cool hearing about it. But I don't know, just sitting there and talking to Leslie Smith, I thought, yeah, why doesn't everybody just sign these damn cards and just find out? You know, find out if they are employees or contract laborers or whatever. So I don't know. Mirab Dvalishvili versus Ricky Simon. Tony Martin versus Kita Nakamura, rounding out the Fight Pass prelims. It's going to be a fun card. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward, hopefully, to doing an and a half. I shouldn't promise, because I damn basically promised it last week, and that didn't happen, and I felt horrible. But, you know, things were bad. But I'm planning on doing it. I may. I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be a late night, but that doesn't bother me. I don't care. And I got to know. Just hit me up. Just hit me up on Twitter and make sure. Because here's an episode where I've talked the whole time, and sometimes I wonder, like, that has got to be boring as shit. You got to get tired of me. So hopefully you don't get sick of me. If you want to, we'll do it, because there ain't a lot of media here. I can't, unfortunately, go grab some. I could go grab Fiasco Jones, but I'm not as quick to control the volume sometimes. So I don't know if that's the best idea. But anyway, all right, listen. Yes, thank you for putting up with me. Hopefully you enjoyed what we did this evening and the journey to Atlantic City. Weigh-ins in the morning. We've got official weigh-ins, ceremony weigh-ins. Of course, we'll have it all at MMA Junkie, and then UFC Fight Night 128. We will have you as well. I appreciate you very much, everybody that's tuned in and watched our coverage, because I feel like I'm on an island out here all by myself. And, of course, everybody that is hearing this, thanks for listening.